this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. This is episode 45, and I have so much respect for court reporters and stenographers. For those of you who don't know, in my pre-mom days and way before I was a podcast host, I was a lawyer, a litigator, and I hated it. But I had to do a lot of work where I went to court or I was taking a deposition, and there was always someone there, you know, typing away and making a transcript of everything that everyone in the room was saying. And they made it look really easy, and I would get the transcripts back, and they always caught every utterance, no matter how fast you were talking or who was coughing or what have you. So I got this idea that I should make transcripts for the podcast because, you know, those of you listening, you're in the know, you're fabulous, you know how to listen to podcasts, but there's some people out there who haven't figured out podcasting yet, or they just haven't thought to search for a postpartum depression podcast, but they do know how to search the internet, and they do like to search the internet. So I thought, this is a great way to just get the stories out there a little more and to connect with a bigger audience. Long story short, though, oh my God, I am not a stenographer. I've had such a mental block about getting you this episode because, you know, when you just like create a mental like speed bump or, you know, something that's just slowing you down. I don't know why. And you were just married to the idea. I was just married to the idea that episode 45 was going to come out with a transcript. And I don't know really how I got so locked so rigidly into that, to that plan, but that's why it's been so ridiculously delayed. And tonight I'm just like, it's Sunday night and I'm like, what is going on? This is such a fabulous interview with the wonderful Vivian, who is a mom with two children, a baby and, oh, must be a three-year-old now. And she's just so eloquently talking about her postpartum experiences. And she, when we did this interview, her diagnosis wasn't that firm or clear. It wasn't finalized yet. They were working on it. And there were some ideas about maybe bipolar disorder 2, which I think is like a slightly lighter version of bipolar. But she, after our interview, met with her psychiatrist who confirmed that she had postpartum depression that wasn't treated properly. And she was also diagnosed with ADHD. And Vivian emailed me that it felt like it fit better than postpartum onset bipolar 2. And when I read the book, Driven to Distraction, Recognizing and Coping with ADHD, From Childhood to Adulthood, it was like one epiphany after another. It was describing me. So many things about my life make so much more sense. It's like discovering the unifying theory of everything for my life. It's been like I've been walking around with glasses that are not quite the right prescription, and the world has been fuzzy for so long, and now I've got the right prescription, and I can see everything in high resolution. It blows me away. Oh, so I'm so glad that Vivian has a diagnosis that feels right and is fitting with her. And I'd urge any of you out there who are getting a diagnosis that doesn't feel quite right to, you know, to push your doctor or not be afraid to speak up and say, this doesn't feel right because A, B, C, because maybe you don't have the right diagnosis. Maybe you don't have the right medication being prescribed to you, because what you're going to give someone for ADHD is very different from what you're going to give them for bipolar disorder. Or alternatively, maybe you've been given the right diagnosis, but the fact that you can't wrap your mind around it is something that your doctor should be working on with you. Because I know I was depressed, but it took me a while to see it. And it took lots of like you know, the onions. I'm peeling the layers. There were so many layers. And my psychiatrist, I remember asking, can you tell me more about this depression thing? And he Xeroxed an article from one of his medical journals that was in all of this like psychiatric medical talk. And it was about like some new study. And it's like, no, just tell me, you know, what it means to have postpartum depression. And he never walked through those symptoms with me. And it took me like 7 months to figure out that the fatigue I felt was related to the depression. And to him, that was just like, duh, because it was just so basic to being a psychiatrist. But to me, a person who hadn't experienced clinical depression before, it was something I needed laid out for me. So if you're being given a diagnosis and it doesn't feel right, feel free to, it's not, you don't have to think of it as pushing back, just ask questions. Maybe the doctor hasn't gotten your right diagnosis. They're not gods. They're not they're not perfect. They don't get things right. They have to hear from you what your symptoms are. So be your advocate. Or maybe they got your diagnosis right, but there's something more that they should be telling you. So you go out there, be that advocate for yourself. Before I turn this episode over to Vivian, this long overdue episode, I do want to give a quick weaning report. I am still weaning off my medications. At this point, I'm at 75 milligrams of Zoloft every morning. And by the way, my old psychiatrist had me take it at bedtime, and my new psychiatrist told me that that can actually cause some insomnia. So she moved it to the morning. So, if that's an issue you're having, you might want to bring it up with your doctor. Again, I'm not a doctor here. We all know that. I'm a mom. I was a lawyer. I don't know about dosing or timing. I just know what my psychiatrist tells me. And if you have an issue that's cropping up for you, maybe you want to ask your psychiatrist about it. But this is, this is a podcast. We're just talking here. We're friends. So anyway, I got my Zoloft down from 150. It was at 150 as of late December, and it's now down to a half of 75. But the week before my period, I'm supposed to go back to 150 because I was just feeling crazy and deranged in the days leading up to my period. So I've done this for two cycles now. The first cycle I either miscalculated or I had a longer cycle than usual. So I ended up taking the 150 for 10 days. And then I felt great. I didn't have any of the like crazy crawling out of my skin, wanting to like throw tantrums and rage fits. So that went well. This past cycle, I only took the 150 for 3 days. I usually have like a 31, 32 day cycle, but then my body just refuses to be regular. So this cycle was 28 days. So I only got to take the 150 for 3 days, yet I felt fine. I felt good. I didn't feel crazy or deranged or, feel this need to like do violence to the world. So one time 10 days, one time 3 days, and the day my period started, I went back to the 75, and I've been feeling great, and I'm still taking 7.5 milligrams of mirtazapine, also known as Remeron, at bedtime to help me sleep. I've missed it a couple times accidentally and still slept just fine, so it's probably mostly, I might as well be sniffing the bottle at this point. So I'm going to be seeing my psychiatrist in a couple weeks, and we'll regroup and we'll talk about weaning some more. It's been an adventure, but a learning experience. And I got a lot more to share, so I'm going to do another episode before I take my real summer vacation, though I guess I kind of started taking it, but not really, because I was constantly thinking about making the transcript for this episode, and I guess I got through like the first 32 minutes, and it took me so long to do that, and the thought of doing the next 15 minutes made me want to like weep, and that's when I decided, okay, enough, go record the intro and get Vivian's story out there, and maybe I'll go win the lottery this week, and then I can pay someone else to do the transcripts, because this shit needs a professional. All right, I'll see you on the other side. Hi, Vivian. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So I know a bit about your postpartum story, how you have two children now, and you had a postpartum disorder with your first that went undiagnosed and untreated. And now you're in the midst of a second one that last we emailed, it hadn't been diagnosed yet. Is that still true?
It hadn't yet been diagnosed. I don't think it had been at that point. It's still like the actual diagnosis is still unclear because the first interaction I had with anybody in the medical professional world was on a day of a kind of crisis day, and So that was a psychiatrist that I'm no longer seeing because she's associated with the university where I work, and they typically just do short term stuff, like kind of like placement to like connect students or staff that are having who need psychiatric help or counseling to connect them with more long term treatment. So she said when she met me, she's like, "Yes, you have postpartum depression." But now I'm speaking with a therapist and a psychiatrist, both of whom work together. And the therapist said it might be a little more complicated than just postpartum depression. It's from what I described to her, and I'll get into it in a little bit. She said that it might actually be postpartum onset bipolar disorder too. So, which I didn't know existed.
I actually was just learning about.
So we're not sure yet.
Okay. So should we start more at the beginning? Is that easier?
Yeah, definitely. So like you guys know, I have two kids. One is almost three. It's a girl. And then I have an 8-month-old boy. And with my first child, the fourth trimester, three months of the baby's life, ex utero, it's always hard, I think, no matter who you are, there's just so much confusion and like, you really, this thing is so little and squishy and am I doing this right? But, I was also very alone because, we don't have any family in the area where we live. And my husband had gone back to work. And so I think I was just, it was like me and the baby all the time. And I think a lot of other moms can identify with this. You know, they're like, I think before the pregnancy, everyone's like, oh, yeah, we'll take a few weeks off and we'll go back to work and it'll be like nothing happened, you know. Mm-hmm. But my husband went back to work after like 2 weeks, and the 2 weeks that he took off overlapped with the time that my family was in town to see the baby. So like at 2 or 3 weeks, it was just me and my daughter, and it was tough. And I remember talking to my sister and my mom and being really scared. And it's a little hard to remember because it's, almost 3 years ago now, and you've got mom brain at the same time and you're sleep deprived, so I don't remember a lot of the details, but I remember being really scared and unhappy, and oftentimes being like, why did we have a child? Like, we shouldn't have had a child. Life would be so much better if we hadn't had a child. But at the same time, I loved her so intensely, and I was just constantly worrying about her well-being. Like, was I feeding her enough? Was she comfortable? Was she too cold? Was she too hot? I think some of that is normal, but then it just kind of escalated, I think, until the first time I remember, like, the first memory I have of, like, shit hitting the fan, so to speak, was when my daughter was probably like 4.5 months old, and my mom was here, and we were putting up like blinds on our windows, and like it just, I don't really know how to describe it, but it like all just became too much for me. Just everything was just too much. And I don't even remember like what triggered me, but I just was like, I need to get out. And so I just like left the house immediately. I didn't even say anything to my husband or my mom. And I just like ran to the park near our house. And I got there and I was like sobbing and like really just totally out of my element and scared and confused. And through my tears, I looked up like a suicide hotline, and I don't even think at that point, I don't remember having had suicidal thoughts at that point, but I called a suicide hotline. Hmm. And I was talking, and there was a man who picked up the phone, and he was just clearly unable to, he was like whoa, which surprised me a little bit. I was like, why are you, it seems like you're surprised by the fact that somebody who's calling a suicide hotline is really distraught. Like, you should be expecting this, no? So I just had a baby and I just want to run away and I'm really upset and I just want to like get away from it all and escape. And you know, everything in my mind, everything was kind of falling apart around me. You know, calling the suicide hotline, like it didn't really get me anywhere. I think I just hung up at a certain point when they were like, you need to go home and talk to somebody. And I was like, okay. That didn't lead to anything, but it did signal to me that like, this was the first time that I'd ever felt. So this, whatever, this kind of like fear and just like loss of control to such an extent. But anyway, I made it back home and I was like telling my mom and my husband were like, where did you go? Are you okay? Like what was happening? And I actually remember when I was at the park, I actually felt like I was in danger. That was probably the time when I was like most frantic and panicky that like, you know, had there been like a highway nearby, maybe I would have just like run into it. Mm-hmm. Like I remember being kind of unhinged. And then when I came home, I told my husband and my mom that I was like so scared and like out of control that I called somebody and just called some random number and was like, I need help. I think it was you know, while it was very obvious to me in my head that something wasn't right, I don't think that that message made it to them, even though they could see that I was, you know, physically and emotionally disturbed. But I don't think, I think they still were like, what's going on? The next time I remember having, the next like big thing that pops out in my mind is, like probably a month or two later, I was visiting my mother and I had my daughter with me and we were visiting my mother and my in-laws. They both live in the same area. Went to my in-laws house and, I was like very, like I mentioned before, I was like obsessed with Valerie's routine, like all of her, like when she was going to bed, when she was eating, how much she was eating, was she cold, was she hot, like was she uncomfortable, like I need to be there all the time, like I need to be the one who's doing everything. And if anybody made any comment about like, oh, she's crying and she's upset, do you think maybe she's hungry? I went from that like harmless comment to being like, how dare you accuse me of being a bad mother? Don't you think every second of my existence is not spent like worrying about whether or not she's had enough to eat? Which in retrospect just sounds ridiculous, but that's how I took it. That's how I perceived the world at that point, was that like I was a mom, but I was like kind of like an imposter mom. Like I didn't really know what I was doing, but like I wanted to know, and I wanted to like show everybody that I knew how to do it on my own, and that like other people, you know, if they made suggestions, it was like they were catching on to this big facade. But anyway, we were at my in-laws, and I was generally being very unpleasant. I think just like not, I was just very, like within myself and moody. And my husband brought me upstairs and had a talk with me that was like, look, I don't know what's going on with you, but you need to like stop being so moody. Like you need to pull yourself out of this, whatever is happening. Like whatever reason you're being kind of mopey and unappreciative. And as he's talking, I just got like, I felt incredibly guilty and ashamed. And I thought, I was thinking, sitting there thinking, I wonder if I ate laundry detergent, if that would be enough to kill me. And that was the first time I'd ever had a thought like that. Mm-hmm. And at the time, during my second pregnancy, I have a little more perspective. And so when those thoughts returned from my second pregnancy, I was able to see them, to like step outside of the experience and see what they were. But at the time I was very much inside the emotion. And so I was like, I wonder if I eat detergent, if that will be enough to kill me. And then it turned to, we were up in the mountains and it was snowing and it was nighttime. And I thought, you know what, when he goes back downstairs, like I'm just going to walk outside and I'm just going to walk into the snow, just into the darkness. And it's just going to swallow me up and then it disappear. So that was when she was like maybe 5.5, 6 months old. And then, again at a year, I remember like crying and sobbing and being like, oh, why did I become a parent? I don't want to be a parent. Because it's so hard. I want to just escape. But at the same time, being so confused by the fact that I desperately loved her. And I think that's something that's so weird about being a parent, is that you have these like two, you're like, oh, I love you so much, but I'm also counting the seconds until it's bedtime. Mm-hmm. I guess that's because, you're still an individual. Like you still need time for yourself. And it's really hard to have time for yourself when, or like even just think an adult thought when you've got your kids to take care of.
Well, at this point in your story, like during that first year postpartum, I know you're a neuroscientist. Were you working at that during
that? Yes, I am.
Or were you at school or were you taking a year off?
So I took 6 months off. I just took a semester off. And I was like in the program that I'm in, we have 2 years of coursework followed by usually 3 years of thesis research. And so I was, I had just finished my first year of coursework. Had actually gotten pregnant in the fall all of my first year. I got accepted to grad school. I started and then I got pregnant, which in retrospect was like really ballsy, which is kind of like,
girl power.
And, the other thing I was going to say that, never really was, I didn't, I think, explicitly recognize it as being part of this story until this encounter with postpartum mood disorders. But it occurred to me when I was listening to you talk about your experience and some of the other moms that you interviewed talk about theirs, that I also had the same intrusive thoughts and images of like throwing the kids against the floor or like off balconies. And I think that some part of me kind of like blocked it out because I was so repulsed by that idea. Like they would just, it wasn't like the kids were being, or that that my daughter was like being a pain or anything. It was just like that idea would just like bing, just like appear for no particular reason. Just like, what would happen? Or like, what would it feel like, if I just like chucked her at like on the floor, and the same kind of like terrible images that you guys described. And it wasn't until listening to this podcast that I was like, oh my gosh, I have those same images, same experiences. And it's really interesting, I think, from my perspective as a scientist, that like that is such a strange experience. And the fact that it shows up in women who come from vastly, who are different ages, from backgrounds of different life situations, but that it's so pervasive and common in postpartum mood disorders. I just thought that was really interesting. So let's see. Basically, like I mostly remember like episodes during my daughter's first year. I remember like those couple of episodes, and I can't really remember what was happening in between those episodes. I guess I just have like serious momnesia, but It's the close, you know, cousin of mom brain.
I'm going to steal that and use that now all the time.
Do it.
Momnesia. Perfect. That will explain why I never get things done on time.
Yeah, totally. You're just like, it's so funny now, like, I will do things and have, like, literally no memory. Like, I just did them 5 minutes ago, but I have no memory of having done it. I'm like, huh, somebody made the coffee. Wait a minute, did I make the coffee? It's crazy. And also, from a neuroscientist perspective, like, I understand, like, the fact that happens, that that's an experience that moms have, just, I think, emphasizes the kind of physical and chemical changes that occur to the mom brain, because, you know, normal brains don't function like that. Normal brains have short-term memory. Sure, they're selective about what things they, you know, what things are pertinent and important and worth remembering, but you don't just, like, forget, just, like, I mean, unless you have, like, have you had a stroke or something, you know? So it's like, I'm waiting for a time in my life when, like, my short-term memory will return. And I really hope it does come back. but so there's just, like, in my daughter's first few years, there were just these episodes that I remember. And then at some point, and I remember during that time, I was like, there's no way I'm ever having a second child. Like, this is, like, the worst experience I've ever had. But at the same time, you know, it was like, so there were some really amazing moments, and I was just in awe of the fact that there was this little grub that had started, like, talking and walking around. And so it was this, again, this very strange, like, state of existence where you have two diametrically opposed, like, ideas coexisting in your head, which I don't think happens very often in normal life. And so I think that's, like, I don't know if my husband feels that way, but, like, that's definitely how I feel about motherhood and parenthood. And I think it's just a very kind of, I don't think a lot of people live with that. So it's a little, it's difficult to accept that you're now in this new stage of life where you're going to have those really conflicting thoughts coexisting in your brain.
You know, I never thought of it that way, but it is. It's like an incredible cognitive dissonance during that first year.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't.
Yes, it is.
Your brain's that's really uncomfortable for yourself psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, now I'm getting
and
all excited.
Like, I've heard recently people talking about like how the transition to motherhood is very difficult. And I was always like, what does that mean? What does that mean? And like the, you know, the question of identity, like, what is that? What are they talking about? And I think that, like, you know, for me, and maybe for other moms, like, we will continue to discover what that means, like, as we, you know, discover, like, what parts of our pre-child identity we keep and what parts of our, you know, what parts of our identity are new. But I think part of it for me, the transition to motherhood and the change in identity has to do with that, like, that cognitive dissonance. And kind of just, and not feeling guilty about the fact that it's there. Because I think that I did feel extremely guilty about having both of these thoughts. And I thought, well, I should just be one way or the other. I can't be, like, mm-hmm. one foot on this side and one foot on that side. But anyway, somewhere between 1 and 2 years postpartum. So I think my daughter was, well, basically at some point between 1 and 2 years, like, oh, let me just backtrack and say that I must have had some other episodes, because I remember walking around in our, pacing around in our living room, talking to my husband and saying, like, this is so weird. Like, am I bipolar? Because, like, I have these intense mood swings where, like, everything is falling apart for no particular reason, or there might have been a trigger, but, like, it's my reaction to that stimulus is, like, way out of proportion. Like, and then it's like, so I'm in this intense mood swing, and it kind of recedes, and I, like, wake up, and I had very little memory of, like, what I was feeling during that mood swing. And, like, people later on would ask me, like, okay, so what were the feelings that you had during this episode? And I'm like, you know, I just, like, it's really hard to tell you. That's why it's, like, I'm glad that the, well, so, unfortunately, I don't think that many of the medical professionals that I'm working with now, none of them have seen me in an episode. But, so I can only, they can only, like, take my word for it, you know, and I can only try to piece together what it was that I was feeling, what was happening. But it was very disturbing because I was, because of this kind of, like, altered state that I would go into. I think it was kind of like, you know, I was very panicky at the same time, like desperate and hopeless and panicky. I was just like all of this together into one theory, one feeling. But so at some point between 1 and 2 years, things like normalized. And I went from thinking, God, there's no way you could ever convince me to have a second child, to being like, oh, hey, hubby, let's have another baby. So that was like a sea change. And in retrospect, like, actually, I listened to a couple of the talks that you mentioned from the 2020 Mom Project. And I thought they were so interesting. I was like, this is so great. Like, this is, I want to listen to more of them. But I thought one of the researchers mentioned that, you know, there are these distinct or very characteristic hormonal changes that occur during pregnancy and after pregnancy, and that all women go through them. So why don't all women have postpartum depression or postpartum mood disorders? And she said, well, you know, some women have psychosocial stressors, like she's mentioned, maybe their partner left them in the middle of it, somebody died, their financial situation is very tenuous, and so that those things contribute to depression we'll just call it the postpartum mood disorders, or that these people had pre-existing mood problems. But then that there's also a subset of the women who get postpartum mood disorders for whom it is completely chemical, hormonal, just like she used that analogy of not all women have estrogen-sensitive breast cancers. I thought that was really interesting because I feel like I fall completely into the, it's 100% hormonal and chemical. And that was comforting to me.
Why? That it's for you that it's hormonal, or?
It's comforting because, like, it confirms what I felt when I'm looking around at my life being like, my kids are healthy, you know, we're financially stable, we have a nice house, like, everything is fine, but why do I feel so crappy?
I see. It's almost like you felt guilty for feeling so crappy, and then it's like, oh no, it's just,
yes,
hormonal and chemical. This isn't my fault at all.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it also, I think, explained the kind of periodicity of it, how I would have episodes and then it would stop and I'd be like, there's nothing wrong with me. And then I would have another episode and be like, okay, no, there's actually something wrong here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because when, I think part of the reason that after my first pregnancy, I didn't think I had postpartum depression is because, well, one, I only knew about postpartum depression. I didn't know that there were, you know, postpartum psychosis or anxiety or OCD or the bipolars. Like, I didn't know that there were these, like, I just didn't know about them. I mean, you talk about that a lot, that there's just, like, problems with educating women. Like, people just don't know. But so, and I think you've mentioned this before, that, like, you weren't depressed. Like, it wasn't like you were just depressed all the time. And neither was I. It was, like, mostly anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just, like, you couldn't drag yourself out of bed. You know, it was just a different experience. So I just never thought, I was like, well, I'm clearly not depressed. I don't have major depression. So that's why, like, I was also so scary while, when I had episodes, because I was like, hey, this is not what postpartum depression is supposed to be like. So what is really happening? But anyway, so it seemed like everything regularized. And if we, you know, if we're going on the hypothesis that for me, this is just my body kind of trying to like ramp down slowly over time from what was happening during pregnancy, that it makes a lot of sense that at some point those systems and those processes would reach their baseline again, mm-hmm. like a year and a half or something after she was born. And that gives me hope for the future this time around. So just with my son, everything, the pregnancy was normal. I did have to be induced because he was like 5 or 6 days late. And that was distressing for me just because, not the induction, I decided to be induced. But I just, every morning I would wake up and be like, oh, I didn't go into labor. You know, I'm just like, oh, one more day. And so I'd like just wake up and cry about it. I think the month or so before my son was born, I was like, okay, this time around, I don't need to do everything myself. In fact, I shouldn't do everything myself. I need to create a support network, which I know a lot of the other moms you've interviewed have talked about, kind of like for this, you know, deciding to have another child and saying like, okay, we've got to set up a support network. And so I made sure that I was listening to podcasts about a podcast called The Fourth Trimester that's co-hosted by a postpartum doula, which until I listened to that, I did not know was a thing, but would have loved to know that it was a thing before. It's co-hosted by the postpartum doula and then a mom. And they talk about how, like, you really have to sleep when the child sleeps, and you can't sleep unless you're eating well, because if you're not eating well, like if you're not getting enough calories, your brain's going to be like, I need to get more calories. I need to stay awake so I can like find food. So you've got to eat well. You've got to stay hydrated and like get, just like find somebody who you can have around. Like if it's a close friend or if you're, or your mom or mother-in-law or something, and just say like, this is your job. Like you need to feed me and water me. And I took that advice very seriously and I did it and it was great. And my mom was happy to do it. You know, she had seen that something was not right during the first, she had been around a lot during those episodes. And so she was like, all right, I'm all over this. So I made plans to have her, she was around for, I made plans to have people around to help me for the first two and a half months of my son's life. And I felt great during that period. I mean, sure. Like, you know, you have the pain from recovering, in your perineum and breastfeeding was more or less fine for me. I mean, apparently it's common. This is also from one of those talks from the 2020 Mom Project, but apparently it's not normal to have breastfeeding, to have pain when your child breastfeeds, but it's very common. But I just go around telling people it's normal because it it does subside. But I can understand that it's very difficult to get past that. You know, it's just terrible. It's just terrible when you have breastfeeding pain. Anyway, where was I going with this? There was some, you know, it was hard. Like the first several weeks of your infant's life always are, no matter who you are. But I remember feeling pretty good. And it was about... Let's see, we had a nanny who cared for my daughter, and she was planning on taking care of both my son and my daughter when I went back to work. But for a multitude of reasons, she ended up leaving us in late October. My son was born in September. And so I had a 1-month-old and a 2.5-year-old, and I was caring for them with the help of my mother-in-law for a short while, but then it was just me caring for both of them. But I remember being like the day after our nanny left, like I remember being really happy, like really excited. Like one of the reasons that our nanny left was because her kind of, like when you have a baby and you get a nanny, there's no reason to talk about about like parenting styles. There's not a whole lot of like parenting choices that need to be made, in my opinion, for a little baby. You know, there's no disciplining. You know, they barely know what's going on. You can't discipline a baby. But when you start getting to like, you know, when you get into like the terrible twos, you have to make decisions about, okay, we're in a tough situation. How am I going to handle this? And the way that my nanny wanted to handle it was different than the way I was discovering I wanted to handle it. So when we parted ways, I was really excited about the opportunity to like really get my hands dirty in the parenting world, you know, and like, take the approach that I wanted to take, which is one of like fostering respect and connecting before, I forget what it is, connect before, like connect them before you, oh my God, what's the word? Mom brain.
It's like the Dan Siegel theory. I'm blanking on it too.
Yeah, but it's like be nice to them before you correct. Oh, connect before correct, something like that. You know?
Yes.
Anyway, so yeah. So, so I remember like that was, I remember that day and I was like super excited and energetic. And then at some point after that, things started going downhill. And like same thing with my last pregnancy. Like I don't remember a lot of the in between, but there are several experiences that become emblematic of those whole periods. So at some point, I think, so I managed to, in November, I managed to find childcare at a great place for my daughter. So she started going to that. And so of course she started bringing home all of the bugs and, you know, all the colds that little kids get. And so we all got sick. And I think that just adds to, you know, that just like, just layer that on top of like the sleep deprivation that just comes with having a young child and like trying to go back to work and just all of this stuff. But somewhere in, I think late January, I don't remember what the trigger was, but I remember being like, I can't keep living like this. And I'm trying to see if I can find, I was trying to think the other day, like, I called a friend of mine who's a nurse practitioner in Florida. She's a close family friend and she's a working mom of two. And she has a focus in, she works in geriatric psychiatric disease, psychiatry. And so I knew she would have probably some, like a little more insight into what I was feeling. So I texted her and said, like, I am just falling apart and I can't, I think there was a lot of guilt and shame and fear and hopelessness and dread and just all these terrible things kind of all mashed together. And I said, like, what should I do? And she said, well, I think Zoloft would really help. So let's start you on Zoloft. But I learned later that the dose she gave me was like the equivalent of like dampening your finger and then just like wiping it around the edge of the little jar that holds the pills. You know, it was like subtherapeutic. But I started taking it and she said, you know, if things change, like if the suicidal ideation and, I had started having this again when my son was, he must have been like 3 or 4 months at that point. If the suicidal ideation comes back or if this drug is not working, like you should definitely connect with somebody who's there locally with you. Cause we don't live near her. So I started taking the Zoloft and, about 2 weeks later, I did feel like something was starting to lift and it was so great. I was like, oh my gosh, I can breathe again. And I've never taken a drug like that before, any kind of medication, that really affects your brain. And I just thought it was amazing. I was like, I'm so happy that this exists for me and for so many other people out there. And like, yeah, I was on 25 milligrams Zoloft and it was working. Even though it's like subtherapeutic, it was doing something. And I was feeling much, much better. And then I think after about maybe like a month and a half, the effects started going down, like efficacy of the drug started going down. And I had suicidal ideation coming back and the kind of like heaviness and like dread and fatigue and just all the anxiety coming back. And I had another like crisis day where... And it's just like these, recounting these situations just seems so surreal after the fact. But I was unloading the dishwasher and my husband comes up and like, you know, gives me a hug and like kisses me and is like putting the moves on me. And I kind of like stiffen up, like, I'm unloading the dishwasher, don't disturb me. and I don't even think he said anything, but like, I immediately felt like incredibly guilty. I was like, I'm failing as a wife. Like, I'm just I just can't do any of this. You know, it's like the inner critic was just like screaming at me. Like, you can't do any of this. You're failing. And my husband was like, could kind of tell that something was happening, but was like, what's going on? Like, are you just moping? Or is like, are we in a crisis? Like, what's happening? And I was like, I didn't even know what to say. I think I just like wasn't really talking. And I was just like, you know what, I should just slit my wrists. And I was like visualizing the steak knives with the little serrated edges and their points. And I was just like I was like, whoa, it's a little too close for comfort. And then he like I said, he didn't really know what was happening. Like, he thought maybe I was just like, it was the morning. Maybe I was just kind of grumpy. And so he left for work. And about a few minutes after he left, this feeling of like these, like, there's the emotions, but also there's a kind of physiological or like physical sensations, like the like tightening in my chest and stomach that had come over me. They all started to recede, like a wave, just like whew, going away. And I was like, wow, that is really weird. And I texted him and I was like, okay, something just happened. Like, something came and that altercation happened and then it just left. Like, this is weird. And remember, I'd been on Zoloft for a while, so I was a little surprised that this had started happening again. And I had a couple of like intense emotional periods that day. And one of them culminated in my thesis committee members taking me to the counseling and psychiatric services office at our university. And because I had told her about the suicidal thoughts, and I think she's obligated at that point to take me to see a psychiatrist. And I was kind of triaged, and the guy who triaged me saw me while I was having one of these episodes. And I remember sobbing and like talking about how like there were just these like thoughts and feelings that they were just stuck to me like leeches. Like trying to get them off. And like, I just wanted them to leave me alone. I wanted the like ideas to go away. I just didn't want to feel this way anymore. Just like very, like this, I was like distressed about the fact that I was distressed, you know? Mm-hmm. So you pile that on top of it. And I met with a psychiatrist who was like, it is not trivial that you just had a child and that you've had this stuff has happened to you before. Little parenthetical here. The first time, I think after I mentioned earlier in the story that I had been like pacing around my living room, talking to my husband, saying like, am I bipolar? What is happening here? After that, I had reached out to my OBGYN and said like, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I said like something to the extent that like, I'm having trouble. I need to talk to a psychologist. And she gave me the number of the therapist I'm actually seeing now. Unfortunately, you have to like go through there's only one path to get to her, and it's not very obvious what that path is. So like, I tried to get at her through one pathway, and some the like receptionist or whoever I spoke to said, oh, she's not taking patients. And then that was it. And I was like, I'm not going to get like a referral to somebody else or anything. So I just kind of got dropped. And then I called my OBGYN back and talked with one of the nurses, because you can't like speak directly to the, like it's a practice of OBs. And so I could leave a message for her. And but I was like, I'd like to leave a message for my OBGYN. And so I did, but I also started talking to one of the nurses there, and she was like, sounds like you need to just talk more with your husband. And I was like, undoubtedly that is true. However, like, that is not the full story here. And like, how dare you like assume that like the only thing that's going on here is that my husband and I are like struggling to adjusting to life with a child. As time goes on, I get like more and more furious about it, especially after like hearing all these other moms talk about how like harrowing their experiences are, and how it's just not always, it's just not easy to get to like figure out what's going on and what kind of help you need.
Your obstetrician, I hope, would be livid if she knew that. I mean, that she's interfering with a medical diagnosis.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm just, my stomach is like, just boiling.
It really bothers me too. And I mean, the psychiatrists that I've spoken to in the last few months are like, they all shake their heads and they're like, I'm so sorry that happened. Like, that should not have happened. And I think that that's probably like a kind of systemic problem in the like mental health industry, so to speak, in this probably worldwide, but maybe in this country in particular, is that like if somebody reaches out for help, whoever's on the other end is like, well, clearly this person doesn't need that much help because they were able to like pick up their phone and dial the number or like drag themselves to the office. And it's like, no, that is like the opposite. These are the people who, it's like they have a moment of clarity and strength and they know they need help.
I mean, if I had called my doctor and gotten that, I don't know if I would have had the strength to call again.
Yeah, it was, I didn't. And like, luckily things just like regularized. But so the end of the story where that brings us to like present day. And so I'm currently seeing a psychotherapist in the women's health, mental health clinic, and I'll be meeting with a psychiatrist there soon to, who will help manage my medication. The therapist said, undoubtedly the psychiatrist will, increase. I increased my doses a lot. I just doubled it, on the day I went to see the counseling and psychiatric services office people. But likely will get increased again, because after telling my story to the therapist, she said it hasn't really been that long since I was having, like, it's been 5 or 6 weeks since I had a big mood swing. And, we're not entirely sure what the periodicity is. Like, am I in a stable place now, or am I just gearing up to have another, another episode? Because all of these things, like so many things in your body, fluctuate either, daily or like weekly or monthly, you know? So, and after having listened to some of these talks, from the 2020 Mom Project that speak to, like the biology of this, it makes me realize that, you know, we're not sure what the perfect storm is of like events around you and chemistry inside your brain and body. I'm not sure what that perfect storm is for me, but it might just be that like one is brewing and I just don't know it. And then it's going to, you know, so we'll see, hopefully not, but, so they'll probably increase the medication so to make sure that I'm at a stable place. But, as I mentioned to you in our last email, the therapist that I'm seeing, like, I told her everything, and then she said, okay, I'm not sure that we can rule out postpartum onset bipolar 2. And she described to me bipolar 1 is what most people are familiar with, where the patient has real depression and has real mania. And bipolar 2 is where you either have, I don't know if it's either or. And but you have depressive states, and you may have hypomania. And I've heard some people's descriptions of hypomania, and I'm like, what's abnormal about that? Like, that's totally how I am. Like, but I mean, I'm a successful person. Like, that's just, like, I think that in some ways, like, I think you said this before, that like being anxious has actually like led to success in school or other areas of life. So like, even though it's not a good thing, it kind of helps you because you're like, I've got to study really hard, or like, I've got to do this. But so like, people are like, I just need to clean things, and I like obsessively organize things. And I'm like, well, that sounds like pretty normal for me. Like, I don't know that that's like manic or like wrong, but I'm not a doctor. So it's with bipolar 2, you have like these depressive states, true depressive states, and then you can have hypomania as well, or you have mixed states where you feel like anxiety and agitation and depression all at the same time. And I was reading a study about this, and apparently postpartum or women postpartum bipolar 2 will often do something called rapid cycling, which is where they switch within a few minutes or a few hours, will switch from one state to the other. And that sounds a lot to me like what I was experiencing, but we'll have to wait to see what the doctor thinks. And either way, like, I don't care. Like, I just want it to be treated correctly, because you're not treating depression or anxiety for that matter, is different than treating treating psychosis or bipolar, things like that. They're different processes. They require different approaches. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
That is quite a journey you've been on.
I think so. But I think it's been good. It's been really good hearing other people's stories, because it has helped to hear other people's stories. I think in part because it makes me realize that like there are people who have it far worse than me. And I know don't compare yourself to anybody else, but like, I'm going to let myself compare myself to others right now and say, like, you know, there are some crazy things that have happened to other moms, and I'm just very thankful that I haven't had to go through those things. And I guess it's like, I ran into a woman and at the tot lot in our neighborhood, and I told her, like, I tell everyone now, I'm like, oh yeah, I suffer from postpartum mood disorder with both of my children. It's like a, you know, pickup line to other moms. I'm just letting them know basically that if they want to talk about it,
right,
like, I am more than happy to talk about it, you know. And I was like, she's like, what's postpartum depression? And I was like explaining it to her, and she was like, that sounds like basically, she was like, that sounds like what I experienced. Isn't that normal motherhood? You know, and I was like, well, you know, you don't think about killing yourself. And she's like, yes, that's true. But I think that there are women out there, moms out there, who even if a psychiatrist would say, like, you don't necessarily need drugs, but you could definitely, like, talk to somebody. Like, it's a spectrum, right? There's some people who are like way on the one extreme that require like heavy duty drugs, heavy duty therapy, hospitalization to keep them and their children safe. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are people who are struggling with the transition to motherhood and the physical stresses that it puts on your body and the new responsibility. And like, and I think they need help too. And I'm definitely not at that extreme end. I'm not at the like postpartum depression light, but I'm somewhere in the middle. I just like wanted people to realize that there is quite a breadth of experiences, and that people should never be like, oh well, my problems aren't that bad. Like, I'll just like muscle through it, you know.
No,
if there's like any doubt in your mind or any, yeah.
We all lift each other up. Like, no matter where we are, like, we all deserve to lift each other up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
And I'm really, I'm excited to see what, where this takes you if you're, like, you're a scientist. So this is, and we've emailed back and forth. This is exciting to you. And this is definitely an area that just needs, there is research being done, but it needs so much more.
Yeah, and I had no idea, like, I think it was Dr. Kendall Tackett, I think that's her name, was like, and there's this study, and this study, and this study, and this study, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of studies. Like, there actually are people, like, a lot of people who are working on this, and I mean, I'm a like, cellular and molecular biologist, so I don't work with humans, but it's something I actually keep thinking about. I'm going to just do a little like alert here that this may be disturbing for some listeners, so plug your ears. But so I work with mice, and it is not uncommon for, I mean, this happens with like other animals, like rabbits and possibly guinea pigs. I'm not sure. But yeah, so I work with mice, and it's not uncommon for a litter of mice to be born, and then the next day you go in and look, and they've all been eaten.
Oh my gosh!
Or like, it's like, you know, yes, it's a little disturbing, but I have to wonder, like, what is that? Is that in some? Is that in some way related to postpartum depression? Like, and I don't know, but it just keeps popping into my head. I'm like, how do you study postpartum depression in mice? Like, what would be my place in this field? But yeah, it is something that that really interests me. And even if I don't research this as a scientist, I have definitely thought about later on becoming a postpartum doula or something like that, so I can like go help individuals, even people who are not, who don't have a mood problem, but like just help moms get more sleep, make sure somebody's feeding them, you know, let them know they have a safe place to talk about their feelings about being a new mom, you know.
Motherhood is tough and uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no getting around it.
Yep. So, but like everybody has said, or like a lot of people have said, I'm really glad I had this experience. You know, I think I got through it unscathed, basically. I mean, I haven't hurt myself. I didn't hurt my children. I mean, I think there was like, you know, it definitely was an emotional struggle, but now I am so much more in touch with the connection between my mind and my body, and I can feel when my body is like, you know, there were several schools of thought historically about emotions. One was, do you have the emotion first and then you have the physiological reaction, like increased heart rate, flushed skin, sweating, that kind of stuff? Or is it the other way around, where you have a physiological reaction to something and then you become aware of it and you turn that into, oh, I must be angry or scared. I forget what the theories were, but I think that the consensus is it's the second one, where the physiological reaction occurs actually before you're even conscious of the emotion. And so now, like, I'm becoming much more conscious of, like, what's happening in my body, and I can feel it happening and say, okay, I'm going to buffer my mind from this. You know, not allow my own physiology to get my mind riled up. And it's like a little bit like cognitive behavioral therapy in a way. It's my own version of it. So I'm glad for what this whole experience has done for me. I feel like I'm a deeper person now, so to speak.
I think those of us who've had a postpartum mood disorder, I think we're going to kind of sail through the teenage years with our kids, because they're going to be so much tougher, and we're going to be sitting there off on the side being like, oh, thank God we don't have a mood disorder though. So you know, we'll just have menopause to deal with.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that one right now.
Well, thank you so much for using your daughter's nap time to talk to me today.
Oh, yeah. All about multitasking.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the little one, my son is still asleep too, which is really great.
So for all those moms out there who are listening with during their children's nap time, thank you for joining us. Thanks for being here, Vivian.
Yeah, thanks so much, Courtney. Thank you so much, Courtney. I really appreciate telling my story and listening to your podcast. It's been a real inspiration, so thanks.
Oh, thank you. All right, that's it for this week. I thank you so much, Vivian, for taking the time to share your story. You made me think of so many different things. It just amazes me how many perspectives there are on this illness and how, I mean, we really, so many of us are taking the big, awful lemon of postpartum depression and turning it into lemonade and getting excited about what it means and what questions there are to answer, and there's so many whys and whens to understand. And the show notes and no transcript, or maybe a partial transcript, I make no promises, but show notes will be available at ppdadventures.com. You'll note I use the future tense there because they haven't been done yet, and this episode is already so long overdue that I know you'll love me anyway if I just get these out there. But for those of you listening in the future, hello to the future. The show notes will be there by then, right? We still have the internet, right? We'll still have show notes. Oh my gosh, isn't that just so weird? I was trying to think the other day, what will be like, what will technology be like? What will the next jump be like? But I'm not Steve Jobs. I can't think that way. I can't imagine what happens after an iPhone. So we'll just have to wait and see. And hopefully these podcasts will be floating around somewhere. So that decades out, someone else can listen to them. Man, who am I kidding? It'll be like going through the, what do you call, I don't even know what you call it anymore, to see like the microfiche? Is it microfiche of like old newspapers, the old timey? It's kind of like in my college, there were certain newspapers that you could actually like get the old volumes for and be flipping to see. Okay, I'm just rambling now. It's Sunday night. The kids are in bed. The air conditioner is cranked. We spent the day at a water park, so my brain's a little zapped. So I think it's time for me to go to bed. Postpartum depression, all maternal mood disorders, are incredibly lonely. It can truly feel like you are the only person in the world feeling the way you do. But you're not. You are not alone. This is the most common complication of childbirth. There are thousands and thousands of women right now suffering alongside you, and so many more thousands of women who have gotten through this darkness and are rooting for you and are cheering you on and are doing work to fight the stigma and to make sure that our daughters don't have to live this way, that our daughters don't need this podcast, because nothing would thrill me more than to have all the numbers just crash and no one's bothering to download this because no one needs this, because we've kicked the stigma in the ass. So you are not alone, and we will beat the stigma. And with appropriate help, you can and will make a full recovery. And you did not do anything wrong to bring this on you. We don't really fully understand the causes of postpartum depression yet. For some of us, it's purely chemical and hormonal. For others, it's just sort of a cocktail of hormones and chemistry and, you know, different sociological, psychological factors. But who cares? I don't care what caused it with you. Does not matter. You are not to blame. I love you, and I hope you have a great week.